Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
We're coming to you from the venerable Hot Stove Society here in downtown Seattle, 4th and Virginia, in the Andra Hotel. For some of you who hang out in downtown, that would be where Lola is.
The five people.
No, things are starting to pick up.
Yeah.
That would be where Lola is, second floor of the Hotel Andra, where Lola is. That's where we do our show every week. Anyway, I'm Tom Douglas, chef owner of Seattle Kitchen, which is like the radio show and my Rub With Love brand and all that kind of thing. I'm a chef owner of the Seattle Takeout out there in Ballard, 52nd and 14th Northwest. And, of course, just 2 weeks ago, we opened C-Town in downtown Seattle down there at Western and Virginia Avenues at the north end of the Pike Place Market. So now we have two restaurants downtown open, Serious Pie downtown and
good for you for bringing back
C-Town Market and Fish Fry.
We're trying to bring back life into downtown because it's a little bit seriously damaged down here.
It is. It's an interesting time. You know, if you have outdoor seating and you're in the Pike Place Market, it's a little bit different than, say, just three blocks up the hill here at where Lola is, where we can't open yet. There's just not enough business at this point. So anyway, that's what I do. Chef in the Chapeau, what do you do?
I am the proud chef owner and cooking every night at Luc in Madison Valley. And Lule, which is closed right now until further notice of more people coming downtown.
Staying at the hotels
and everything. Traffic is just very low right now. And you know what? It's okay. The city is breathing at a low pace, and it's going to restart and boom, bigger than ever. I'm sure of that.
Yeah, this is our COVID-free 2 hours. We hope that you're in your garden harvesting at this time of year. This is a big harvest time. We're getting at Prosser Farm, our farm over in Eastern Washington, we're getting eggplants, tomatoes, peppers, Hannah's Choice melons, which, by the way, at C-Town we have the Hannah's Choice cantaloupe rita. Cantarita. It's so good. I had one yesterday. Ooh, I got a little tipsy off of that one.
Yeah, those melons are definitely delicious, the one you
brought
me. Aren't
they good? That's my taste of the week, but we're not quite ready for that yet. We're going to catch up with our friend Kay Simon, winemaker for Chinook Winery in Prosser, to hear how harvest is going over there in Eastern Washington. You know, it was just 2 years ago, I think, or maybe it was just last year. I can't remember when it was so smoky over there all the time that they were picking up notes in the grapes. You remember Valley fire?
Yeah.
And they were talking about it in Eastern Washington,
absolutely,
too, because of all the Canadian fire smoke coming down. So I'm curious where we are. This week, we got an alert went off at 11 o'clock 2 nights ago saying evacuate from our farm in Prosser.
Oh, my God.
And we looked around and we couldn't see any fires. And we had known. I had come through Manassas Pass going out there and saw the smoke and drove through the smoke and... So, but an hour later, they came back on and said, oops, wrong county. They meant to say, you know, that Yakima County, and we are in Benton County. And, but there's a big, when I last looked, it was almost 60,000 acre fire going on over there. And we're getting some heavy smoke at the farm. But you could see where that might affect the flavor profile of a grape or, like, there's so many Concords on the vines right now. The hops are all just starting the harvest season. You can see where that smoke's settling on some of these products.
Well, it's pretty heavy stuff. I mean, especially when you get that close.
Yeah, just think about standing next to a charcoal grill, right?
You 1 minute next to a charcoal grill, you stink like smoke.
Yes, you do, and that's just the way it is, right? Or outside at a campfire, you smell like the campfire pretty darn quickly. So you can see where it might affect some of the products. Interesting stuff. Labor Day weekend is here, and folks might want to be heading up to their nearest parks or to enjoy some sunshine. Terry and I will pack up your ideal Labor Day picnic.
Yeah.
Some shareable snacks.
Can't wait.
I'll tell you how to get there with that. We're going to talk to Mara Hardman of Seattle Cider Company and about their partnership with City Fruit. You know, I just got a note from City Fruit that thanking us for being one of their first customers ever. And we didn't realize how far back our relationship went. So City Fruit basically gleans or harvests out of the urban backyards in the area, right? You know, you might have an apple tree that's just been there for 50 years. And
I should definitely get them to come to my house.
I know, exactly. So it's interesting. I would go onto their website, but we'll talk tomorrow about it. Back by popular demand, the return of What's in Your Fridge. And lastly, we continue our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge brought to you by Rub With Love, my very own handcrafted versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Okay, buddy, Taste of the week.
Taste of the week. I discovered something this week I didn't know from one of my former who, Alice Wong from Darrington, who brings me, vegetable every year, this time of year, especially tomatoes, peaches, all kinds of different things.
Mm-hmm.
They brought me some aronia. Have you ever had a berry called aronia?
Aronia, no.
It looks just like a wild huckleberry or blueberry, but uh-huh. more like a huckleberry. And it is as acid and tannic as a wild berry you would expect. No sweetness,
mm-hmm.
But a marvelous berry to do with meat or to do pickled and finish like I was doing a pheasant last night at Luc. And I put those pickled aronia on top of it, mm-hmm. and made a sauce with all kind of the berries as well. Delicious, absolutely delicious, and a beautiful discovery. Aronia. Aronia.
I don't know how you know how to spell it?
Aronia.
Huh. I don't think I've ever even heard of
maybe,
it before.
Maybe, Madeleine, you could put that on Facebook and have people start playing with it.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty cool, pretty nice discovery. I mean, I've been here for 35 years now in Seattle. And
it's definitely not a huckleberry.
It's. I don't think it's an huckleberry, no.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I wasn't.
What color is it?
Just like a wild blueberry.
Okay, all right.
Think of wild blueberry.
My taste of the week, thanks to you and thanks to my wife, was the melon salad that I had over at the Luc restaurant. I know Jackie is running heavy on some produce, so that she, when I brought over my Tahoe full to the brim of produce last week,
very kindly,
she had me bring over a few totes for you. And one was the Hannah's Choice Musk Melon. And I would tell you, obviously, we can't grow enough for our listeners or even for all of our restaurants, but... if you have a chance, when you go seed shopping, look for Hannah's Choice Musk Melons. This
so
is our
Hannah's is A-N-I-S-E?
H-A-N-N-A-H.
Oh, Hannah. I see.
Hannah's Choice.
Got it.
Musk Melon. And if you see that seed, give it a shot. This is our eighth year of growing this particular melon, and it is so fragrant.
It is scrumptious.
Right. Sweet. What's the difference between a good melon and a great melon? You know, a good melon, when it's ripe, it's luscious, it's juicy, blah, blah, blah. But a great melon just overwhelms you with aroma. It's like a truffle.
Yeah.
It overwhelms you with good aroma, right?
I mean, those melons, you smell them before you peel them like you're supposed to, you know, from the bottom. It just excels so much smell.
Yeah.
So much beautiful scent. It's gorgeous.
Well, I don't know. Do you have enough for people to come this weekend and have that salad?
I still have some. We're going to feature it tonight. I don't know if I'll have any left for tomorrow.
All right. You can try. Anyway, up next, Kay Simon of Chinook Winery is going to tell us about what's happening with this year's wine crop, grape crop over in Eastern Washington on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Chef in the Chapeau is to my left. I'm standing
Tom
here.
Tom Douglas is to my right.
Exactly, sir. And we are happy that you're hanging with us all day today. We're here for two full hours, both Saturday and often Sunday, depending on the sports schedule on Cairo. If you miss us on the terrestrial radio, you're always welcome to go to anywhere that you get your podcast and look us up, because you can download us from there. We have invited Miss Kay Simon of Chinook Wines to the show to talk about what's going on in Eastern Washington today. You know, this is about her 35th vintage over at Chinook Wines.
Really?
They're just to the east of downtown Prosser, Washington. And she is the beast that is responsible for us having a farm in Prosser, where my wife is now slaving away daily on her hands and knees, picking radishes and green beans.
Eggplant.
And eggplants and everything else.
I take no responsibility.
Oh, you certainly do. for 35 years ago, we started going over to Chinook for the release of their Merlot at a Father's Day weekend and picking ripe cherries off of their little orchard that they have there.
Yes, I've done that. That's
yes,
cool.
You've done it. And so that's how we got to know Kay and Clay. And, of course, I have been buying wine from them through my Cafe Sport days and certainly many of our restaurants. And they're also the makers of Lola Red, White, and Pink.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, in our when Lola was open. welcome to the show, Kay.
Thank you, Tom.
What's going on over there?
Well, it's smoky.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
It's smoky, and the grapes are ripening, the tomatoes are ripening, as you know, the eggplants are ripening, and so we'll soon be diving into harvest. of grapes. Of course, it's a couple of the whites come on earliest, the Sauvignon Blanc and then the Chardonnay, and we get those from our good friend and growers, Luann Holden Boucher and Dick Boucher, and you've met them multiple times.
Mm-hmm. And your Sauvignon Blanc is one of my favorite, for sure.
Oh, well, thank you. They grow it. They have a slightly north-facing little slope up by their house, and it's this sweet little spot for Sauvignon Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, great.
And speaking of smoke, we were just talking about it, and we were curious about, you know, a couple of years ago, it was so smoky from all the Canadian fires, and certainly Napa and Sonoma are dealing with smoke down there. Did we ever really have a definitive answer to whether it did affect the long-term flavor of the wine?
That particular year that I believe you're referencing, yes, but it was very site-specific. And that's a good subject to bring up, because we have at the WSU Wine Plant Center, which is not far from me, it's about a half an hour down in Richland, Washington, we have a chemist, a brilliant chemist and wine researcher, Tom Collins is his name. And Tom is doing very specific smoke paint research.
Ah.
And it's interesting. And so he is purposefully smoking grapes. He builds tents over them. And then measures, and it takes pretty intense smoke to impact the resulting wine.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing really specific research on that right now, and yeah, finding some interesting
is
things.
Is there a way to, for example, rinse off the grapes when they come off? So, I mean, I know you don't want to put water on grapes, but
It's at the washing the grapes would be really difficult, because right, when you think about it, in our small winery circumstance, the grapes are all hand picked.
Right.
So you could conceivably wash them, but you would dilute them in doing that.
Right. Especially because they're ripe, so they're very fragile.
But when you think of most of the grapes in the state are mechanically harvested, and so they're already juiced when they come to the winery.
Right.
So it's more mitigation after the fact, and that's another aspect of Tom's research, is trying to mitigate the compounds after the fact.
If you're ever out and about, Kay, your winery in Prosser is kind of the epitome of what people dream about when they say, oh, I'd love to open a small little winery.
tell them the truth.
And no, I'm serious.
I'd like to open a restaurant too, Tom. How's that go?
I'm just saying it's picture perfect for what people dream about when
yes,
they're opening their little winery.
And
I know you're struggling right now with, you can't do tastings, but you're doing curbside service at the winery. Also, you are selling through PCC. And
PCC,
you are
community market.
Yeah. You just released your 2019 Cab Franc, which is to me one of the preeminent rosés in the marketplace. So,
thank you.
So people can buy that now at PCC. Is that true?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. If you want to buy some of Kay's wine, just go to call the winery, 509-786-2725. I know in the break I offered to, when Clay, your husband, comes over with the shipment, he's welcome to drop him by at the warehouse. And if our listeners know and have been to our warehouse kitchen out in Ballard, you're welcome to pick up some of Kay's wine right there at the warehouse. So we'll be happy to make that transaction for you. Call online, 509-786-2725. Buy your wine from Kay. We're just really holding it for you until you want to pick it up, so you don't have to drive 3 hours.
It's very nice of you to do this, because
that's no
nice to have a place to pick up the wine, because those guys don't have time to just keep going driving from Prosser to here. So
right, and if you're buying a case, it's not always the case that you can buy the full box at any sort of retailer. So
Clay's driving around Greater Seattle as we speak, taking wine around. So
I'm glad to hear
with his mask.
So, Kay, you are working with Thomas Price and working on an event called Long Live the Kings. And Thomas happens to be here, right here in the studio. He snuck in, and I don't know if you knew he was going to be here, but he snuck
in. I did not. I just exchanged emails with him this morning.
Yes. There you go. So welcome to the show, Thomas.
Thank you. It's great to be here. It's great to not be on a Zoom call.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you working with Kay on?
So Long Live the Kings is a salmon preservation habitat organization, and Kay and Clay are kind enough to donate wines for their gala event, which is on September 10th, virtually this year, unfortunately. But beautiful Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet Franc will be the featured wines. And I'm really excited to be in this room with a bunch of people that I go way, way back with Tom, who was kind enough to employ me and my wife for a while.
That's how you met your wife, buddy.
That's how I met my wife. And Thierry, and it's just great. And Kay, I've known you for 25 years as well, and always enjoyed the wines. If we have time, do you want to knock out a quick note about the Sauvignon Blanc? We got about a minute left, and the Cab Franc.
Delicious.
Vineyard sources. I love those wines.
And I also want to give a shout out, really, while we're on the subject of Long Live the Kings. It was our mutual friend Pamela Hinckley who introduced us to that organization when she was at Red Hook Ale Brewery. They brewed a beer that benefited Long Live the Kings. And so our association making a wine that's sold exclusively at PCC Community Markets, a white and a red blend, and $2 per bottle sold at PCC goes to the organization Long Live the Kings. And we started that association with them in 2005, courtesy of Ms. Hinckley, who introduced us. And it's been a really mutually satisfying project.
That's awesome.
Well, later in the show, we have Jock White from Long Live the Kings coming on to tell us about the auction itself. So, but if you buy the it's the Sauvignon Blanc and it's the Cabernet Franc.
Cab Franc, yeah.
Is that, Kay, are those the ones at PCC that you can buy and make the donation with?
The ones that the donation comes from are a white blend and a red blend. And they have a specific label on them.
Okay.
With a fish. Instead of on our regular label, it's a bowl of grapes. And on these particular blends, it's a fish. And the back label and the front label let you know that it benefits Long Live the King.
As someone who also works to preserve salmon runs and habitats, I thank you very much. We've been talking with Kay Simon of Chinook Wines. Her number is 509-786-2725 if you want to call and support the winery. Buy some wine and have it brought over here to Seattle. That would be great. You're listening to the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio 97.3. Up next, we're going to talk a little Timpano. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society radio show. Tom Douglas here.
Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we have a correction, chef.
Yes.
Yes.
I stand corrected. Not
both of us. I agree with you. Both of us, last week we said that Bubble and Squeak was mashed potato and broccoli.
Yes.
And it's not. Ann Murphy texted us and said that we are full of baloney.
Yes.
That we should stick to
French food.
French food. She is a Scot, and she has told us that Bubble and Squeak is mashed potatoes with onions and cabbage.
And we actually knew that. We just then corrected.
It's still a brassica, right?
Yes.
Isn't cabbage a brassica? So,
yeah, but...
Yeah, we were close.
We're trying to tell
anyway,
you.
Anyway, Ann, thank you for the correction. Feel free anytime to call and tell us that we are full of bologna. Matter of fact, we should probably start that segment.
We're actually full of cabbage.
I know, we're full of cabbage. And, you know, we did that segment on the show of it's a bunch of cabbage.
That's right.
And we would tell stories. Do you remember that? We would tell stories, and the listeners here in the audience had to guess whether or not we were telling the truth or not.
That's right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we aren't that good at making up lies.
I think we definitely fall on the right side, I think.
Yeah.
Because we never could tell a lie very well.
All right. Thank you, Ann Murphy, and we'll never err again. Let's talk Timpano.
Yes.
What do you know about Timpano? T-I-M-P-A-N-O.
I know it's a time-consuming dish to make, but extremely beautiful and rewarding to look at, mm-hmm. and very tasty when it's done correctly.
Where did you look at it?
Here at the Hudstall Society.
Oh, you did?
Because you made a class, uh-huh, and there was a one left over, and we looked at it. And,
I thought you were going to say
that. And my first time I saw it was in The Big Night, the movie, one of my favorite movie, food movie of all time, for two things. One, the acting, and two, the music. I've played that CD probably 100 times in my garage when I'm working pretty loud, and, you know, and the neighbors are probably thinking, uh-oh, the Italians are out again.
Right.
No, I'm French. But anyway, yeah, what a great scene. There's so many good scenes in that movie about the cooking. And that timpano, if you're with a very, very specific, uptight chef making a timpano, you probably want to be the chef, not the apprentice.
Well, you know, so often when we cook, and you know this as well as I do, that when you're cooking in a restaurant, you rarely cook something that, like a Palace or Deli or something, you rarely cook something that feeds multiple people when it comes out of the oven. Now, I kind of relate it to when, you know, maybe a first-timer is trying to cook their first whole turkey. That turkey isn't like you just sat down at a restaurant table and ordered the turkey dinner.
Right.
Because now I'm just making one portion of turkey, and I've got it set up to do just that.
Right.
But when you're making a centerpiece dish, like prime rib at Christmas or turkey or the Easter lamb or something, that's what timpano is like.
Right.
Because you're doing all this effort, and you're building it all in one pot, right, and then you... The big thing in The Big Night was when they turn it out. Right?
Oh, yeah.
That was...
And he's like...
Stanley Tucci and those... I can't remember the other lead actor's name.
And there's a lady, and they're all looking at that thing like...
Just waiting for it. Is it going to stand up?
It better come out, because if it doesn't,
exactly,
we're dead.
Exactly. So that's what timpano's like. And we don't often cook like that in our restaurants.
Right.
And I would say probably not even at home super much. I mean, I'm so used to making turkey or whole rib roast, but a lot of people don't cook that way.
You know, I think of items like this, like, for example, a quiche, you know, which sounds very benign, but it's actually... To make the perfect quiche is not exactly simple. Mm-hmm. You have to put a lot of attention while you're doing it. You have to keep refilling it while it's cooking to make sure that you fill it up to the top. So you have this beautiful quiche completely filled up and the flavor and everything. Then you pull it out and you still have to make sure you cool it off properly so it doesn't sweat, doesn't do all these things. And then you have this perfect quiche, and it's there is nothing more lovely than cutting a beautiful piece of something that you worked on for hours, and then like a good tart, you know, or...
Right.
A cake or something. It's kind of the same concept of like, you're working on it, trying to make the perfect, and then you cut through it and it's beautiful and you're like, ha, got it.
Did it. Well, I'm doing a class here at the Hot Stove on Thursday, September 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. And I'm going to demonstrate timpano. And I've done this class here annually as what happens when you have a cooking school. You like, you'll repeat certain things, like we do our coconut cream pie class every month.
Right.
But our timpano class is just once a year. And so this year, since we're virtual, I'm going to do the class as a demo, but I'm going to make timpanos for everyone to pick up at the Ballard Warehouse Kitchen.
Oh, cool.
If they want to then enjoy the timpano while they're watching class.
Wait, how many are you going to make of those?
Oh, however many signs up for the class.
Ooh.
So it'll be super fun.
You're going to be working overtime for that one.
I know, I know. And so the part that's really cool about it, and getting back to the whole centerpiece of the table and the excitement, the anticipation of does that thing come out of the mold or not, we actually have timpano molds. They're kind of big enough for dinner for two or four, you know, depending on how big your appetite is, probably four, but I would serve it to two.
Two Tom, four regular.
I know, exactly. So what happens is we make the pasta, right? And then the bowl, this special bowl, is about 4 to 6 inches deep and about 4 to 6 inches wide around. You know, it's like that sort of measurement.
And not straight up, kind of.
Yeah, it's like angled. Graduated. And then you layer your pasta in, right? And then you start...
Cook pasta.
No, it doesn't have to be, but if it's fresh pasta, it doesn't have to be cooked.
Yeah, raw
fresh. If it's dried pasta, then you have to cook it
Lentures,
first.
Yeah.
But it's raw pasta, and it does, you know, I cook mine, but it doesn't have to be. The part about timpano, which is really fun, is that you have to make all the ingredients in advance.
Right.
So when you're ready to start the project, the actual build, you've already done your work with sautéed broccoli rabe, right? You've made your tomato sauce, your bechamel. You've made meatballs. You've hard-boiled eggs. You've made Italian fennel sausage, right? you've got your penne all cooked up, your penne pasta. It's really up to you what you put in there. You could layer in, if you wanted, a layer of anchovies, right? Layer in, you can put in olives or whatever it is that you want your timpano to be consisting of.
And different cheeses if you wanted to.
Lots of mozzarella, lots of Parmesan. And so you just layer, and then you put a pasta lid on it.
Right.
And you literally just take that bowl full of goodness and pop it into your oven and let it bake low and slow for maybe hour and a half. And so this is where the drama comes, right? You pull this out, you let it rest. It has to rest for a bit, because if you try to turn it out,
it's going
to
fall apart. It's too hot.
It's just too hot. Yeah, it's just going to fall apart. So you have to let it rest, and then in that time, the pasta soaks up some of the juices of your sauce and whatever else, that, you know, all the sausage juices that have come out.
This makes me so hungry.
It's just so fun, right? It's just such an anticipatory event.
Right.
It's a real event in your kitchen.
Everyone should have one dish like that. Then they know how to make it.
Yeah.
And then when your friend, once a year or once every 2 years, you just pop it out, you just make that dish and you go, check this out. And you invite a few friends and family and you make that dish. And it's really cool to have a dish like that.
Or you create, you own it and create your own party out of it.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, every other year, I have my bread, soup, and nebbiolo party at my house, right? Mm-hmm. You came to it once. I think I invited you, but maybe you couldn't come.
I had all that.
Yeah. You know, so own that party. Lord knows we need parties right now. We need events. And even if it's socially distanced, it's better than nothing.
Right.
Because these kind of things bring people together and they show off your skills and they make you proud and they create friendships and lasting histories. And so that is something that we're going to try to recreate for you next September the 10th, right? Next Thursday night, I believe. Yeah. And so I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to making one again. I haven't made one in a year.
If I was free on Thursday, I would definitely come. Because to me, that's when cooking, many people have a little talent in the kitchen. You know, they have some things they know how to do. They know how to cook some. But if you want to have one dish, this is the kind of cool dish that you want to learn. To me, it's reminiscing of a lasagna. Because it's the same principle of the pasta, the stuffing, the different layers. It's the same kind of idea. The only difference is it's also a showpiece. A lasagna is not a showpiece, but that is a showpiece. Like you get
it's 6 inches tall. Yeah. You know, when you turn it out,
upside down, and if it comes out, it's like the most beautiful thing in the middle of the table.
And then you slice it like a pie.
Yeah.
And when you slice it, you see all the layers that you've delicately made, right? And everything is, you see the circles from the penne pasta. You just see the meatballs. And
what I would do is make a very good tomato sauce with that. And then use that as a base to put your slice of timpano on top of that.
Jackie and I spent a few hours at the farm this last weekend making, all of our sauce tomatoes are ripening right now. We made tomato sauce for the winter. 40 quarts of tomato sauce. Really, really good.
Ooh, I'm so envious.
Anyway, so that's what we're going to do. If you want to sign up for our class, go to hotstovesociety.com and you can sign up for the Thursday, September 10th timpano class and also pick one up at the Serious Takeout doc over there in Ballard. We're going to finish out our boxes with a Sagra di Radicchio salad and then a bottle of Barbera d'Alba and some chocolate budino. So that's going to be a fun timpano dinner.
Fun.
That's Thursday, September 10th, 6 to 8 p.m. Tickets, including a dinner box, can be found at hotstovesociety.com. Coming up, it's time for a return of What's in Your Fridge.
Looking forward to that.
Looking forward to that. We got tons of great fridges coming our way. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Tom Douglas here.
Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
We're going to continue with our packed full show today. It's been quite a ride already, and we got 2 full hours of this. So it's time to bring back one of our favorite segments called What's in Your Fridge. Madeline, you got onto our Facebook page, and people sent in some interesting mixes of things that were in their fridge.
We announced the return of the segment and got a lot of applause. People are very excited. They were able to send in 5 ingredients that they have in their fridge. They can comment on Facebook, or they can also send us an email to hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com. And it was a lot of fun to see. I picked a few here for you guys to to see what kind of concoctions you can make.
All right, we're going to give Terry the first one. Gail Schriebers sent her fridge ingredients. She has salmon, crab, cougar gold cheese, green onions, and cherry tomatoes. Man, I know what I'd do with this one in the heartbeat.
Oh, me too. I'm definitely going to do a nice little tomato salad because it's that time of the year. It's going to be hot this week.
Mm-hmm.
But first, what I would do is take the salmon, put a little rub with love on top of that. Maybe the mushroom rub and love.
That would be good.
I love that rub. And grill the salmon and then cool the salmon down after it's been cooked. And then shred it right on top of my salad with a little bit of olive oil, just a little salt, and keep it very, very simple. Then I grate some cougar gold right on top of that, and I'll have a wonderful little salmon salad with tomato, green onion. The crab, I would do something different with the crab. I probably would do keep it in the fridge and do another kind of salad with that.
You know what I've done with that once in a while where you have maybe a bit of this or a bit of that? It's like I'll make the salmon and then do a little crab salsa on top where you kind of make a little crab relish or so for the bigger piece of protein that you have left.
Yeah. You probably have a piece of cucumber left somewhere or something like this. Make a nice little diced cucumber, crab, little seasoning, you know, just put all that and put that right on top of your salmon. That would be delicious.
It would be a fun little way to use up if it's just a little bit left, you know.
The point that I was trying to make was to cook the salmon and then cool it off so you have a salad.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not a hot dish, you know, kind of idea because it's going to get hot this week.
All right. I'm going to jump in the fridge with Heidi DeMora. She has got a few things left in her fridge. It sounds like she's been in the tropics. To me. She's got Brazilian cooked rice, which I'm not really sure what that means, but she's got it. Brazilian cooked rice. I wonder if it's like dirty rice or, you know, or a spiced rice of some sort. Leftover steak, fresh pineapple, orange and red peppers, and squash and eggs.
Mm. So much lovely thing in here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's totally a beautiful salad again.
Well, it would make a delicious burrito if you happen to have a tortilla. Or you could do like a shashuska. Am I saying that correctly?
Shashuska.
I always get that pronounced wrong. The Jewish kind of baked egg dish with tomato.
Right.
But you could do that with, you know, go ahead and roast off your peppers or puree them. That's something people don't do very often is make a puree of peppers. So, for example, Jackie and I just made our annual big batch of tomato sauce for our freezers. We used a bunch of her peppers. We cooked them with the onions and the garlic and before we added the tomatoes to it. And they just get creamy like the tomatoes do when they cook. And then puree the whole thing. And what it does is it adds depth of flavor, but it's just a sauce.
Right.
You're going to strain out all the pieces you don't want anyway. So that might be a great way, especially if you
had... That would be good with the rice, especially.
Yeah, if you have that and then make that little kind of baked egg dish. So you got the rice... The steak I'd probably either leave out or slice on top, you know, marinate and slice on top.
Right.
But finish with the fresh pineapple, but bake the rice with your puree of peppers and maybe get out a can of tomatoes and put that whole thing in a casserole.
Mm.
And then just literally break your eggs over top so that you have 5, 6, 7 eggs.
At the last minute.
They're going to take 5 minutes to cook as you put them back in the oven, right? And just let those kind of cook sunny side up on top. And then finish with a little bit of the steak as a garnish and some of the fresh pineapple as a garnish. And that sounds pretty dang good.
Yeah, nice cracked pepper. That would be delicious.
I personally, on this particular dish, would add hot sauce. And I really don't know Brazilian food well enough to know if hot sauce is traditional down there like it is in many Mexican diets.
Well, it's pretty hot and humid, you know, in big part of Brazil. So I would definitely think they would have some kind of hot sauce. That seems to be...
Yeah. So anyway, that sounds good, like a little baked egg dish.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're up next. Emily Sakuma, she has got a fridge that sounds potent.
And very healthy to me. Sounds very healthy. She's got rutabagas, arugula, eggs, avocado, kimchi. The only thing I'm not liking in this is the kimchi and the avocado together. I don't foresee that.
Why?
I don't know. I'm trying to taste avocado and kimchi together. It doesn't seem like it works.
Well, avocado really doesn't have a ton of taste, right? It's more fat.
Well, it's more the texture than I guess I'm not attaching to my kimchi. I want my kimchi to be prominent.
You know, Roy Choi made Korean-Mexican tacos famous in L.A.
Right.
I guarantee you he's putting avocado and kimchi
well, you know
together.
What? That just goes to show you have never tried those two together.
Uh-huh.
I literally just had some kimchi rice a couple of nights ago from the Pike Place Market. They were doing a kimchi rice, and I can't remember, shame on me, from who, but that was one of the items, and that was super delicious. Eggs on kimchi, absolutely.
Absolutely.
You know, it's an combo. Easy one. A baked egg, arugula is not a problem. And the rutabaga, what I would do is julienne them and pickle them. Because I think it would go really well with the kimchi if it was pickled. Just as itself, as a raw vegetable, it would also be delicious because it would cut through the, through the, you know, hot spice of the kimchi. But I think I would pickle them to give it another layer of flavor that's not existing in there.
So you'd have to really shred it if you're going to pickle the rutabaga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just, I mean, julienne super thin, super fine. Shred it and then put it into a mixture that's cold, and in that 10 minutes, your rutabaga is going to swallow it because rutabagas are full of water, so they swallow very quickly. It's like a turnip kind of idea. And, yeah, and the avocado, I'll put it on top because it's there, but if it was in my fridge, I would keep the avocado for another usage just after that.
Mm.
Like a nice little tartine. Maybe you could do it as a starter. You could just do the avocado on toast and do that as a beginner, and then... Or maybe even put the egg on the avocado toast. That would be delicious, too.
Well, that could be the garnish, right, is the avocado toast.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Kimchi, to me, there's so many different ones. I was shopping at Wajimaya the other day, and there must have been 25 different kimchis.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure they're talking about the Napa cabbage kimchi.
Right.
And, they, of course, they range. People perceive them as being super spicy. And they can be, but there's also mild kimchi too.
Yeah.
So
they're not all super spicy. Like they're not crazy spicy.
There's white kimchi. There's red kimchi. But my favorite are things that stay crunchy.
Right.
Right. Like you can do a quick carrot kimchi. Even whole garlic cloves you can kimchi, and they are crunchy and potent. They have.
You do that just before a meeting, so
yeah,
everybody's even. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're making your own kimchi, you're going to clear the room anyway. That stuff,
yeah.
Especially this time of year, you got to be careful you don't blow the lid off of your kimchi pot.
I'll never forget when you showed me that at Dahlia Lounge about 20 years ago. You're like, come and see in the basement. I don't know if you remember this. You showed me you had tubs of kimchi working. And I was like, holy smoke, what's that smell?
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, damn.
It was in the boiler room. We had to hide it. You know,
exactly, because, I remember that.
You weren't allowed to do certain things. We'll just leave it at that. If you want us to discuss what's left in your fridge, please just go talk to Madeline online.
Yep, Facebook. They can search for our Hot Stove Radio show, comment on our post, or send us an email at hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com.
And is Seattle Kitchen still live?
It's changed its name, so they can search for Seattle Kitchen, and Hot Stove Radio will still come up. So
okay, good.
We've kept the same fan base and the same profile.
And don't forget to go to your favorite farmer's market this week so we can have some fresh vegetable in your refrigerator to play with.
It's funny what you end up with. Like when I see somebody with leftover crab in their fridge, it's like, boy, I don't know if I want to tempt fate on that. Crab goes bad so fast. Matter of fact, if crab by itself goes bad much quicker than, say, crab that's in a crab cake.
Correct. You
know, that has acts as a preservative. Up next, Maura Hardman is here from Seattle Cider Company, and we're going to talk about her relationship with City Fruit on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. Thanks for hanging through that long break. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
We have another full hour of the Hot Stove Radio show. We're going to talk to Maura Hardman of Seattle Cider Company up next. Plus, we have Long Live the Kings Executive Director Jock White is going to be here to chat about their upcoming fundraiser next week. And finally, our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge is going to wrap up the show. Thomas Price is going to stay and join us for that. From Thomas, you know, I hired Thomas 25 years ago at Etta's as a bartender.
And he's a master sommelier, so we're going to have, I hope the questions are not on wine.
I know, exactly. Let's welcome right to the show Maura Hardman from the Seattle Cider Company. She is the PR and marketing director. And welcome, Maura.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. It is always a pleasure to get to chat with the Seattle Kitchen Radio crew. Wonderful.
Well, thank you. It's certainly a funny time in our lives right now. I know we're in the COVID free zone, but for 2 hours a week here. But you did share when you got on the air that you had your first day of school being the new teacher for your daughter.
For my son.
Well, for your son.
And actually, you know, today, yes, happy first day of school to all in the Seattle public school system. He had a great first day. And it was online, so it's a little bit different. We're starting to get used to it. But he did great, and his new teacher is wonderful. Shout out to Highland Park Elementary.
That's so cool. And Madeline has two children, too, and I know that she's pulling her hair out as we speak. But it's going to take a while. She's got a lot of hair. So tell us about your relationship with City Fruit and what your company or the company you work with, Seattle Cider Company, does with City Fruit every year.
Sure. It's actually one of my favorite stories to tell. But Seattle Cider Company has been partnering with City Fruit since 2015. And City Fruit, they're a wonderful nonprofit organization. They have a very small staff, but an enormous amount of volunteers. And they do a couple of things where they help harvest fruit from the Seattle urban canopy. So some of this is from public lands. Some of these are private fruit trees that people register to have volunteers come and pick because, you know, they have more fruit than they know what to do with. And City Fruit certainly knows exactly what to do with it. They take that fruit. They donate it to local food banks, and they also have an incredible CSA system where they sell fresh fruit and produce to restaurants in the area. I know that Tom Douglas restaurants actually have purchased from them, so thanks for the support there. Yeah, so lots of really great local tie-ins. One of the things that City Fruit does specifically with Seattle Cider is, you know, they realized there are certain fruits, the ugly fruits, or, you know, maybe apples that hit the ground before they get a chance to go in the basket, or things like crab apples that usually you're not going to donate a crab apple to a food bank. But we love to make cider out of them. And so we've been making City Fruit cider out of those harvested apples. Usually it's somewhere, you know, around 40 different apple varietals. And we sell the City Fruit cider and donate the proceeds back to their organization.
What a great thing.
It's super cool, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very cool. Right now, I probably have 100 red apples on the ground in my backyard, and it really makes me mad because they fall down before they're ripe, you know, and they're big, the big apples. Mm-hmm. And the tree is a dwarf tree. So I still have 100 in the tree and 100 on the ground, but it makes me mad because sometimes I get to it and I make vinegar out of it, but some years, like this year, been kind of busy around the the COVID. I haven't had a chance to get to it. So they're rotting on the ground. I'm like, God, it makes me mad.
Well, I think it might be time to register your tree with City Fruit.
You can actually go online.
Yeah. And they will they'll send volunteers out to your house and harvest for you. I think, I'm not sure if they have a wait list right now, but that information would be online. But yeah, if you have fruit trees, I know I lived in a house that had a very, very prolific plum tree, and we ended up registering that, and, you know, they're able to put that fruit to good use. My neighbors got really sick of me trying to pawn off additional plums. I'd come by with bags, and they'd say, okay, no, we're actually good, thank you.
Yeah.
But they're putting them to great use.
There are so many. I mean, it must be interesting. You said you have 40 different types of apples. As a cider company, it must get you guys excited to see some of these apples show up maybe off of a tree that's 50 or 70 years old, sitting in North Seattle somewhere that everyone's forgotten about. But that's part of the original apple source, right, for ciders.
Absolutely. So what's really cool about this, and, you know, when we talk about our City Fruit partnership and the City Fruit cider, this is truly our most Seattle cider that exists, because the apples are harvested from Seattle. They're coming from, you know, public and private lands. And, you know, all of the partnerships that City Fruit has, the apples are coming from Seattle. The pressing is happening in Seattle at our cidery in Soto. It's the only apples that we're able to press in-house. So it's a smaller volume than we do of many of our other ciders. But we're pressing in-house. We're bottling in-house. Obviously, we're fermenting before we bottle in-house. And then we're selling in-house. And all of that is this really nice loop of all things Seattle and all things local.
God, it's a definition of sustainability right here.
Yeah, exactly. Where is your best spot to send our listeners to go buy your cider?
So we, right now, our tasting room has been open. So tasting room is a great spot to go. We're located in Soto. It's called The Woods, and it is shared with our sibling company, Two Beers Brewing. That's a great spot. We also for local folks in Washington, we offer, you know, shipping throughout Washington. So if you're a little bit like out of, you know, out of the range, you can have City Fruit shipped to you. That's actually on our Two Beers Brewing site. We also now, you know, a lot of things changed and we had to be really nimble. We are shipping direct to customer on our Seattle Cider site, and that's 38 states. So we cover most states at this moment. We're trying to get into the rest, but yeah, you can go online to either seattlecider.com or twobearsbrewing.com and check out our stores. We also, for those who are, you know, looking to have the cider brought directly to them, we do free delivery on Thursdays if you order online and then yeah, we'll bring it right to your door. I think you have to order by noon on Thursday and we'll get it out to you same day.
That's super fun.
Yeah, that is very cool.
Well, I'm looking forward to trying it and supporting City Fruit. I know there's some art for the label that's available too.
Absolutely. So this is a really fun idea where, you know, the cider market is getting a lot bigger than it has since we started in 2013. So there's a lot of really incredible cideries out there. And we certainly encourage folks to give all of them a try. I personally think ours is the best. So we wanted to think about, you know, some fun way to differentiate this really cool program, brighten up the label a little bit. So we actually partnered with local artist Tyler Martz. If you want to check out some of his other artwork, you can go to tylermartz.com.
Well, thanks, Mark. I have to cut you off there because we're running out of time. But if you want to know more about it, go to seattlecidercompany.com and check out more about the City Fruit and that Tyler Martz and the whole deal that is City Fruit Cider.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Uh-huh. When we come back, we're going to talk about what to do and plan for on your Labor Day picnic. It's Tom Douglas.
Jerry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
The Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Hey, it's time for Labor Day picnics here on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Tom Douglas.
Jerry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm excited to hear, chef, because your family was more of a picnicking family than mine was. Mine would go out to the backyard, but your family actually went on the road. What are you thinking about for Labor Day picnic for you, and what would be something that maybe our listeners could make for themselves, something new and exciting?
Well, I think one thing to think about when you're going to do a picnic, especially if you know it ahead of time, is to prep yourself for success. One of the things I like to do is to pre-cook my meat, because you always take some meat, obviously, whether it's a roasted chicken or it's a piece of roast beef or whatever. I would definitely plan that ahead. I would also plan on buying your cheeses, because I always take cheese on picnic. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming everybody does does it too. Cheeses, your charcuterie, if you're going to take some. Be careful if you're buying charcuterie, then it's not 100 degrees outside and you're not keeping it in a trunk for 2 hours. That goes for everything that you're taking
everything,
with you.
Yeah.
So ice is very important. The right size cooler is important. Your beverages are very important as well. Make sure it's diversified. Don't forget water, but don't forget the wine. And a good spot to be able to lay down a big blanket or even a tarp if it's kind of wet down, a blanket on top of that, and then you're set. You get a wonderful idea for a picnic, and then maybe an umbrella if the sun's going to be beating on you. But other than that, it's salads. This time of year, I think salads, because it's so much, there's a big harvest coming down. Mm-hmm. All these vegetables that are ready and everything. For example, first thing that comes to mind is eggplant. Eggplant is not something you probably think of taking on a picnic unless you already have the eggplant and you can turn on the barbecue, grill your chicken, do your grilled eggplant, get ready ahead of time, and now you have all these wonderful base for salads. You know, same with potatoes. Cook them ahead of time. Put them on the grill outside if it's too hot. Put it on the pot and then cook it, you know, blanch them. So you have potato for potato salad if you want to do a potato salad or and so on and so forth. So I think, to me, a very successful picnic is a prep ahead. To do a picnic on the spur of the moment is a little bit, you're going to end up, it's not going to be quite as nice as you want it to be, or for me at least. Mm-hmm. You know, just like anything else.
I think there's a couple of points there. Well, I'll start with one, but I want to go back to your roast in the beginning. You said pre-cook your meat. But one thing on picnics to remember, and I think, you know, we have some of our health department people listen to our show, Chris, and I want to say that, there's some techniques in building your salads right. that you really are should think about. Right. So, for example, potato salad, right? Now is not the time to, like, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. Your picnic's at 1 o'clock.
Right.
Now is not the time to cook your potatoes
right.
and to then add in your room temperature mayonnaise and your pickles and stuff like that. When you're making stuff to put into a cooler to take on the road, you want to cook those potatoes the day before and right. get them down below 40 degrees, right? Correct. Get them down to temperature. You want to put, if you haven't opened your jar of mayonnaise and it's sitting in your pantry, you want to put that in the refrigerator the day before.
Correct.
If you're using pickles, the day before.
Right.
So that all your ingredients are cold when you're putting it together and then back in the fridge right away. If you start with a lukewarm potato salad, it's going to go bad twice as fast
right. and it's also,
on your way to your picnic right. as it would if you started with an ice cold potato salad,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
So there's some basic things like that that people right. don't really think about.
And also one key secret of to me of good flavor, you season the day before. For example, still talking about potato salad or any kind of salad, you season the day before, you re-season the day of. You know, before you leave.
Carefully, because the salt didn't go anywhere.
No, I don't mean salt. I mean more like olive oil. You know, you give it a nice yeah. little retouch at the last minute, only because it will imbibe, but it will also dilute.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in 24 hours, it changes flavor. So you just re-season everything just before you put it in your cooler, and then you put it in your cooler, keep it cold. And then when you're outside, you know, it's a beautiful thing to be in the countryside. Now, if you're fortunate enough to have a campsite, for example, where there is, you're allowed to do fire and everything, then we have another type of picnic.
Oh, do we now?
Terry is bringing duck breast, is bringing, you know, things you can put on a grill and gently cook on a wood fire. Then that's a different type of picnic. We're going sit down, we're going table, we're going plates, we're going knives. You know, we're going to hold a caboose.
So let's go back. When you started, though, you said pre-cook your meat. And so in that scenario, let's just say that we have two kinds of meat, right? We have steak, like a New York steak, or we have a top round roast.
Right.
And what is your end idea for how you're going to eat that meat and what you should bring with it? So, for example, a lot of people, I would say, would bring pre-built sandwiches, right? They would take that steak or the top round, slice it thin and make steak sandwiches or something like that.
Yeah.
So you're saying bring the pre-cooked meat and then build your sandwich there?
Correct.
Okay, so tell me about that.
So, for example, like I said, if you're fortunate to have fire.
That's different.
It's a completely different story. So if you don't have fire, but what you do is you bring your baguette, you know, your baguette stays, does not go in the cooler. Your bread stays outside the cooler.
So bring a fresh baguette.
Go to Bakery Nouveau on the way out of town, pick up your baguette and you'll have fresh bread or a loaf. And you take that bread, and then you build your sandwich with all those cold salad as you want to eat. So let's say your leaves of gem lettuce or whatever you're putting as a green into your sandwich, all that stuff is fresh and delicious. Bring a mixing bowl, little olive oil, sea salt, put that on your bread, put your meat, put your vegetables, put the other slice of bread, and you have a fresh sandwich.
Instead of something that's been soaked through or your bread's cold.
Bread's going to be really cold, which is not very attractive. It's going to be soaking wet, which is sticking to the roof of your mouth kind of bread. And this is not something I'm a big fan of. I mean, I really eat it because I love sandwiches, but it's not as best as it can be. And again, it's all in the planning. You know, bring the ingredients separately and then mix them together at the last minute. You'll have a fresh-made sandwich.
My sense would be go ahead and leave the baguette on the side and bring butter or something, but then just serve your sandwich deconstructed. Bring your steak and just have a nice little slice of steak, pick it up maybe with a leaf of the bib lettuce, you know, some fresh herbs in there, some fresh basil leaves, and just kind of eat more whole foods and not worry about building a sandwich. Just like every time you put food out for, say, with tortillas, people will always want to build some sort of taco, whereas those tortillas are so delicious, if they're homemade tortillas, delicious on their own.
Right.
Eat the tortilla by itself, and you eat the meat and the beans and the rice by itself. It's perfectly okay.
Totally agree.
But as Americans, we always want to build something out of our food.
Because we're familiar with sandwiches. I mean, you know, sandwiches is a big thing in America. You know, we love sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And we build sandwiches. But the problem with sandwiches is I try to get it to... I just made the sandwich, as opposed to I made the sandwich yesterday, and it tastes just like I made it yesterday.
Which is all the sandwiches you buy at the grocery store, correct, right? Generally, I shouldn't say that. It's not always true, but oftentimes they've...
Well, anything that's more than 3 hours in between two pieces of bread will have a different taste and texture than something that's been prepared, you know, 12, 15, 24 hours.
Right. If you're going to take one thing away or two things away from today's comments on picnics, I think my biggest takeaway is cold, cold, cold.
Yeah.
Make sure you chill everything.
Correctly.
Plan it the night before. Don't be trying to rush out that morning and making stuff out of room temperature foods. Even your can of tuna, if you're making tuna fish salad, put it in the fridge. Have it be a refrigerator cold when you start to make your tuna salad, right? So, and your takeaway would be?
My takeaway would be a plan ahead. You know you're going on a picnic. It's not the spur of the moment thing. And if it is, it's still the same, and the same idea can stays in there. But the more time you have, the better off you can plan. And if you can plan your picnic, make it as good as possible and as fresh as possible. Last minute is good, but...
Last minute is good. And stop on the way out of town for a fresh loaf of bread.
Exactly.
All right, we'll be right back on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show, Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Tom Douglas here.
And Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat, also here.
Also here, yes, you are. We're here at the Hot Stove at 4th and Virginia, downtown Seattle. We're going to talk to Jacques White. He is the executive director of Long Live the Kings. And I'll let Jacques tell us, because he'll do a better job than I will, of the mission of Long Live the Kings. Hi, Jacques.
Bonjour, Jacques.
Good morning. Good morning to both of you. Glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us about Long Live the Kings. I know I've been a supporter for quite a long time, but it's not one of those organizations you hear enough about.
Okay. Well, just real quickly, Long Live the Kings is a 33-year-old organization, actually 34 years old this last month. And we were formed with the mission to recover wild salmon and steelhead and to support sustainable fishing in the Pacific Northwest. So we have a dual mission. We're both focused on wild fish recovery, but also doing so in a way that will provide sustainable fishing now and in the future.
And so it's really important from the perspective of fishermen, because this is what helps keep the sport alive by taking good care of the resource in the first place.
Absolutely. Absolutely right, Tom. So we're of the opinion that, I don't know if folks know this, but many of the fish in Washington State that we catch and that supply food for wildlife, like southern resident killer whales, actually come from hatcheries. And that's just because we've done so much to harm the habitat around the Pacific Northwest and in our state over the last 100 years. But we still have a significant number of wild runs. Those wild runs are essentially our gene bank. They hold the diversity that allows our fish to adjust to changes in climate and changes on year by year of weather. And so maintaining those healthy wild runs that we still have remaining guarantee that we'll have healthy salmon runs into the future, even if the environment changes around them. So that's it's like a bank account or kind of the crown jewel of our fish and wildlife in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's like a seed bank.
Exactly, exactly.
So what are some of your, just to digress a little bit, because I'm just curious, because when I drive over to our farm over there in Prosser, I drive through the canyon, which is on fire right now, on the canyon road, basically. But I always see guys out there on the Yakima fly fishing along the Canyon River there. What are some of your favorite places to fish around the Sound or around Eastern Washington?
Yeah, well, I have done trout fishing and fly fishing, particularly when I was younger. But I have kind of a penchant for the marine environment. I guess maybe that's why I became an oceanographer. But I like putting my line into the marine environment, not really ever knowing exactly what's going to come up. Even if I'm targeting a salmon, I might catch something completely different, and I'm never quite sure what I'm going to get. So I like that. I like that mystery. And some of the places that I like to fish are over on the west side of Puget Sound, near Kitsap Peninsula, and also the Olympic Peninsula. I like to fish right along the beach, actually, on Whidbey Island on the west side when the pink salmon are running. Those stocks are in pretty good shape. When they run every other year, they can be quite plentiful. You don't need a lot of fancy gear to go get them. You don't even need a boat. You can just stand on the beach and catch out and cast them. And you actually catch fish when they're there. So I like fishing as an activity, but I like catching fish too.
Yeah, I've never really fished from the shore of Puget Sound. I've only been in the boat with my pal Keith Robbins at Spottail Salmon Guide.
Captain. Keith is an awesome fishing guide. He's terrific.
Yeah, he fishes over there by Kingston all the time, seems like to me. So now you're having a benefit auction, and of course, as with all charitable events these days, they're happening virtually instead of in person. Tell us about what's going on for Long Live the Kings.
Yeah, so, you know, like other nonprofit organizations, we rely heavily on our private donors to keep us going. And particularly generalist support allows Long Live the Kings to, you know, pay for things like rent and our administrative activities, but also allows us to tackle new projects when we find things that we think are important to do and maybe we don't have time to write a grant proposal or something. It really allows us the flexibility to be the most effective organization possible. So normally we'd have a couple of live events during the year and we'd invite folks to come for dinner or for a presentation. This year that's out, right?
Yeah.
So we're doing a big experiment here. We are having a all Zoom gala on September the 10th at 7 p.m. You can go to our website, longwiththekings.org, and find out how to sign up for this. And we're going to have a presentation. I'm going to be joined by Tim Joyce from Q13, who's going to be hosting it. We're going to have a sommelier there who's going to be running a wine tasting for the first part of the event so folks can enjoy some wine while they get ready to hear about Long Live the Kings and our efforts to recover salmon and steelhead. And then we'll have a few videos, and Dow Constantine will be appearing and talking about how some of our new work we're doing with the county on Kokanee, which is essentially a landlocked sockeye salmon in Lake Sammamish in King County. That run of salmon is significantly depleted, and Long Live the Kings is running a rescue program, or what we call captive brood program, up at our Orcas Island facility to make sure that those fish don't blink out. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Be a first for us, but we're excited about it.
That's very cool.
I didn't even realize that we still had kokanee. That's how lame I am. So that's awesome to hear. A landlocked salmon. I think of steelhead being that way too. Am I wrong on that?
No, steelhead. We do a lot of work with steelhead. Steelhead are a really fascinating fish. It is essentially a rainbow trout that decided to go to sea.
Okay,
and so they're genetically not distinct from rainbow trout, and as I understand it, a rainbow trout can have steelhead offspring, and steelhead can have rainbow trout offspring, and it just depends
really?
On. Yeah, isn't that? That's very confusing.
Wow.
But it under certain environmental conditions, it can trigger a trout to go to sea or a steelhead to stay in the river.
Interesting.
And you're much more likely to get a rainbow trout out of a rainbow trout pair. Who spawn together, and a steelhead from a steelhead pair that spawn together, but the capability is for them to switch back and forth. So, and there have been times where rainbow trout have been landlocked by a dam or something, and you release that, and then some of them start migrating and turning into steelhead. Yeah, I don't know if you know this or not, but unfortunately, two interesting facts about steelhead. Steelhead are the Washington State game fish, so that's our state fish. And unfortunately, in Puget Sound and some of the runs in the Columbia River are now listed as threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act. So we Long Live the Kings and many others are working very, very hard to recover steelhead populations in Hood Canal, Puget Sound, and elsewhere.
And there is still some, I think, Indian caught steelhead, which is not commercially available, you know, not available to commercial or sport fishermen. Over off the Olympic Peninsula, too. Is that true?
That is true. And as I understand it, you know, the fisheries for those runs is fairly tightly controlled by co-management arrangement between the local Indian tribes and the Washington Department of State, the state Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the organization that, you know, works for taxpayers to manage our natural resources.
That is very interesting. I've had comments of customer coming into the restaurant when I had steelhead on the menu.
Yeah, I know.
And saying, oh, you can't have steelhead.
I know. It gets fishermen all worked up.
I know.
It's just this goes way back to the Bolt decision on a lot of areas.
I think also, aren't there pond-raised steelhead that come from eastern Washington and Idaho?
Yeah, there's farm-raised. Yeah, absolutely. So I just wanted to get this before we run out of time, though. We're going to offer a Long Live the Kings dinner box all next week. So that's 9/9 through 9/13 at Sirius Takeout. It's going to include Alaska King salmon, some eggplant caponata from our farm, Jackie's Creek salad, garlic fried smashed potatoes, blueberry and plum crisp, a jar of our veggie rub, and it's going to be a dinner box that's a portion of the proceeds will go to Long Live the Kings for the entire week. So you can buy that any night of the week, or you could buy it and jump in on their virtual auction and have dinner while watching the auction. So
cool idea.
I'm going to buy one, and I hope other people do too.
Cool. Thanks, Jock. More information, go to www.lltk.org, and you can register and get all set and ready to go for this fantastic event. Up next, it's our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia right here in the Hot Stove Society Kitchen Show. This tasty trivia is brought to you by my very own Rub with Love, handcrafted versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Look for Rub with Love products in your local grocery store or butcher shop, or find them online at tomdouglas.com/shop. Maddie Dow, our producer, is here, and tell us who we're playing for and what they're going to win today.
Awesome. We are playing today for listener Gail Craig. She sent in her fridge that I think we're going to get to next time, but as an avid fan of Rub With Love, we're going to send her a Rub With Love Grillmaster set that includes a jar of smoky barbecue rub, a jar of toasted shallot mustard, and our ancho molasses barbecue sauce, perfect for holiday Labor Day grilling.
Lovely, and she gets that... in honor of the loser of today's contest, the one who will not be wearing the, as Thomas Price said, the heavyweight belt. And Thomas Price is going to stay. He was on earlier in the show. He stayed to join us for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia.
Awesome. Okay, Terry, you are up first. Are you ready?
All right, I'm ready.
Okay. What is the term for drinks that are served after a meal?
Digestif.
Sorry. Correct.
Took me for a second. Exactly. Oh. I want to make sure I said this right.
It's an Italian word.
Digestif. Yeah, Italian.
Sterlet, Kaluga, and Ostera are varieties of which food? Kaluga. With a K. There's another type that starts with a B as well.
Wow, yeah, I was going to say, dude, is it a type of, can't give it away.
Is it a type of caviar?
It is, correct. Nice.
What's that all about?
Terry's my favorite today.
Oh,
sorry.
My God. Thomas Price, I don't know what to say about that.
Man.
That was fine. Ostera is Ostetra. And
yeah, we got it, Chef. We all knew it. You're the one that was stumbling.
Okay, question three. How many teaspoons are equivalent to one tablespoon?
Three.
Correct. Well, you were three for three.
Oh, I can't believe I remember that. This is like the system. I mean, I've been working in an American kitchen for so long. Every time, I'm like, I have to think about it so hard.
It's good. Okay, question four. Pastel de nata are sweet egg tarts that originated in which country? Portugal, Croatia, Greece, or Spain?
I'm going to go with...
Is that the almond paste one with the white icing? Is that the pastel de nata?
I think so. They're the egg tarts. I think there's a little bit of the yolk coloring in them, I believe.
Oh, okay. I'm going to try Portugal.
You are correct, sir. 4 for 4. Ooh.
On a roll,
the battle,
Chef,
of the Toms later on are going to be a big one.
In trouble.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not, Thomas.
Last question. Which meat is used to make a cottage pie?
Sheep.
false beef.
I was just trying.
She seemed to enjoy that.
Yeah, I really did. Okay, 4 out of 5. That's not pretty. That's pretty good.
Pretty good.
I neglected to introduce Thomas and tell people what his background was because he kind of jumped on that first segment there. So, Thomas, you are a master sommelier, and you work with the Michael Jackson Winery.
Kendall Jackson Winery, but yes, as long as we remember Jackson, that's all we're looking for.
The important part is, yeah, when it comes to grapes, you have to beat it.
Yes, precisely.
Oh, this is all funny stuff.
It's all so fun. I'm going to jump in here and start asking the questions. Okay, Thomas, your first question. Which seed is the basic ingredient for tahini paste?
What is sesame?
That is correct.
Ooh.
Well done.
Ooh, he's used to play games.
Mm-hmm, I like it. Okay. What color is velouté sauce?
What is white?
That is correct.
I don't even know what that is, velouté sauce.
Velouté.
Velouté?
Oh, velouté.
Velouté. I might be pronouncing it wrong. I apologize.
I heard a B.
Okay, question 3. The first Waldorf salad was created in which U.S. city?
What is New York?
Also correct. You are 3 for 3.
New York is not a city.
New York City.
Yeah, New York City is a
New
city.
York City.
Yeah, New York
I heard
is
a city late in the game. Either, so. Okay, what is the principal flavoring in amaretto?
What is almond?
That is correct. 4 for 4. Okay, you might be able to beat
this. They crush us. What really bugs me.
Saved all the hard questions.
They're not very polite.
What? Okay, here we go. Eros, Evangeline, and Everest are varieties of which fruit?
I don't have a clue either.
Are apples? Wrong.
Strawberries. That's okay. 4 out of 5, 2. You're tied with Thierry. Okay, Tom.
Good job, Thomas.
I am not looking good right now. First of all, you led the... Never mind.
I wanted to help Thierry.
I know.
It's been so nice to
him. I'm a sore loser.
Wiener Schnitzel is traditionally made from what meat?
Traditionally, it's veal, but it's also often made with pork.
I will give you veal. That is correct. The traditional.
That's what I said. Traditionally,
exactly.
With veal.
I got it. You're 1 for 1. Okay, this one I had to move. I had to move this from Thomas's questions. I had to move this from Thomas's question. This is for you. The French wine Chablis is made from which grape variety?
Can you spell the wine?
Chablis.
Oh, Chablis.
Chablis.
Chablis. I said Chablis.
Yeah.
Chardonnay.
Correct. Well done. I couldn't give that one to Thomas. It would be cheating.
That'd be too easy.
Which Italian city was the Bellini cocktail invented in?
I want to say that I wonder what Thomas would say if what is Gallo's Chablis made from?
Just about
Thompson
everything,
Seedless.
Everything but Chardonnay.
Yeah, exactly. What is the Bellini from? I'm going to say Milan.
False. It is Venice.
Venice.
Harry's Bar, I believe, is the one. What flower does the saffron herb come from?
Crocus.
Correct. Okay, you are now 3 for 4.
Yes.
So if you might be all tied up. So
who's going to take away the belt?
We might have to come up with a tiebreaker question. I have not prepared that. What fish is used to make the traditional Scottish Cullen skink? Herring, haddock, salmon or cod?
Haddock.
Dang. Correct.
Why
well done.
Why do you want me to lose so bad?
I thought that was going to be hard.
She's surprised you know.
Everybody got 4 out of 5, so I think Gail just wins.
She just
all
wins.
Around.
What did she win?
She does win our Grill Master set from Rub With Love, which includes a jar of smoky barbecue rub, a jar of our toasted shallot mustard, and our ancho molasses barbecue sauce, perfect for Labor Day weekend. Happy grilling.
Happy grilling, for sure. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Show. You're listening to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. This show is produced by our team, Madeline Dow Pennington and Amy Richardson at Tom Douglas Restaurants. Sound and production by Mark Goodenow from the Production Foundry, and our editor is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Remember, if you missed any episode of our Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and have a fabulous weekend.
And thank you, Thomas.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.